Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, August 16th, 2020. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week. I'm going to go through a list of topics for today's episode, then we'll jump right into it. So in this edition of the Weekender, we have results for Impact Wrestling, 205 Live, ICW No Holds Barred, which is actually two shows we're going to talk about. We have a recap for the latest Being the Elite episode titled Malfunction. And we have some new Ring of Honor news. So I'm going to be talking about their upcoming Pure Championship tournament and my thoughts on that. And it's great to see Ring of Honor making these moves to return to regular programming, to put on new shows, because, you know, for instance, National Wrestling Alliance, they haven't had any new content on their YouTube channel in over a month, and they haven't run any shows. And, you know, part of that has to do with Dave Lagana not being in the company anymore, I'd imagine, because that's a huge change that they have to make and a huge gap they need to fill for their future, you know, programming, whether it be on the internet or, you know, their live shows and all that kind of stuff. But that being said, you know, Ring of Honor is making their return, so we're going to talk about that. And then, of course, I have my recommended show on independentwrestling.tv and a recommended free match for y'all to check out on YouTube. So let's go ahead and jump right in. We're going to start off with my recommended IWTV show of the week, and it is New South Pro Wrestling's 5th anniversary show. So the company is called New South, spelt how it sounds, N-E-W-S-O-U-T-H, and the show is their 5th anniversary show. This is available right now on independentwrestling.tv, and if you want to check it out, these are the matches to expect. We had a last man standing match between Adam Priest and Stephen Michaels. We had Trixie taking on Shalandra Royal, Leo versus I Am Sam, Brett Eisen versus Tyler Franks, Sean Christopher and Kevin Ryan taking on Dump Sanders and Brandon Williams. We had a Buried Alive match between Chris Crunk and Kung Fu Donnie Janella. The New South Tag Team Championships on the line, Two Fly Ty and Dylon taking on the Lady Killers, the team of Daniel Perez and Bailey Blake. And in the main event, the New South Championship, the heavyweight title. I don't know if y'all have ever seen this thing. They have the largest world championship belt. It's got to be the largest belt in the world for any promotion. It is absolutely humongous. I love it. One of the coolest belts in the game of pro wrestling currently, in my opinion. It was the champion, Cabana Man Dan, defending his title against Derek Neal. So, once again, this was New South Pro Wrestling's 5th anniversary show. I'll highlight some of the talent here. You know, Brett Eisen, I talk about him every single episode of the podcast. So if you want to get my thoughts on him, go back. He's one of my favorite independent wrestlers. He's a guy that I have got to watch live many, many times. He's from the Nashville, Tennessee area. I lived there for the last 10 years or so before recently moving back to Atlanta. And Brett Eisen is also someone who works in Atlanta for companies like Action Wrestling. And he's all over the place. He's all over the Southeast, but he's really all over the place, you know, countrywide at this point. And his match with Tyler Franks, really, really good stuff. And Tyler Franks is somebody to definitely keep your eyes on because he's got a lot of upside. Future star, in my opinion, Tyler Franks. So great stuff there. Great match. We had Chris Crunk and Donnie Janella, which is crazy because this was a Buried Alive match, which you definitely wouldn't expect to see a Buried Alive match on most independent shows. And the fact that they did this, I thought, was really out there and unique. And it wasn't surprising considering the matchup here. Like, Chris Crunk, for those of you who've never seen him, he's a guy that I think he's been on my radar for a long time, and I've seen him wrestle, but it's one of these things where, like, I'm seeing his name pop up more and more lately, especially with companies that I follow a little bit closely, so it's cool to see him here. And then Donnie Janella is a guy that, I mean, I think the first time I saw him, he was wrestling was Donnie Primetime, I want to say, and he, like, maybe around a year or so ago, maybe closer to 2 years, around the time that AEW started, like, really catching steam and Joe Janela was going to be heading to AEW, Donnie Janela started doing kind of the Donnie Janela gimmick. He has, like, this kung fu character, and he looks a lot like Joe Janela. So it's interesting, to say the least, but definitely want to give a shout-out to those guys. And I've already given it kind of a shout-out here, but Cabana Man Dan, the champion for New South, heading into this match against Derek Neal. Cabana Man Dan is a guy who does not get enough credit, in my opinion, for what he's done the last few years. He's a veteran wrestler that's been wrestling for a really long time, but from what I understand, he basically wrestled for quite a while, took an extended break, and then came back a few years ago, and his comeback has actually resulted in him having the most success that he's had in his career. He's a smaller guy. You know, he's back in the days where Marco Stunt was working the indies, a few years ago, Marco Stunt and Cabana Mandan were known as they might be giants because they're like the two smallest wrestlers, you know, out there. And for those of you who haven't seen CMD, also known as Cabana Mandan, for those of you who haven't seen him before, I'd liken his size to, he's very close to the same height as Marco Stunt. A little bit taller, a little bit more filled out, but the guy is all heart. I mean, he has had some incredible matches that I've witnessed live and, of course, through various promotions here on IWTV. And Cabana Mandan is just, he's an overall really nice guy. He's a guy I've talked to in person a few times and can't say enough good things about him. So definitely wanted to give a big shout out to Cabana Mandan for this match as well. So once again, that's my recommended show this week. It is New South Pro Wrestling's 5th anniversary show, and it is available right now on independentwrestling.tv. Moving on, we're going to be talking a little bit about Ring of Honor for this kind of whole next segment, if you will. Basically starting off with my free YouTube match that I'm going to recommend. So I've been recommending a lot of Ring of Honor shows lately for free on YouTube, mainly because they haven't had shows, the last few months. I think pretty much all year. And basically, a couple days ago, they put up a match that I really enjoyed with two performers that I think everyone will recognize. It was Kenta versus Tyler Black from End of an Age 2009. So if you go on Ring of Honor's YouTube channel and you just look to, you know, the recent uploads, this was just uploaded, I think, two or so days ago from the time of this recording. And Kenta, of course, you know, went on to become Hideo Itami in the WWE and is now Kenta once again on the, you know, on the Japanese scene, mainly New Japan Pro Wrestling. And for those of you who might not know, and this is a great match to go back and be a reminder, that Kenta was like the top indie star in like any company in the world, you know, that wasn't, you know, a mainstream pro wrestling company. Kenta was like the hottest commodity in wrestling, especially in Japan during this time frame. And it's cool to go back and watch that, and then to kind of also be like, it's amazing how it never really translated in the WWE for his career. Now, granted, you know, a lot of that wasn't the WWE's fault. Like, Kenta was injured a lot, as Hideo Itami, and, you know, stuff just, it just felt like nothing really went his way, and he didn't really catch any breaks. And now that he's back on New Japan, like, obviously that's changed, and he's been highlighted heavily since then. And then, of course, Tyler Black, his opponent, is now known as Seth Rollins, and we all know where he's at, one of the main players on Monday Night Raw every single week, one of the top, you know, one of the main, I don't want to say faces because he's a heel, but one of the main, I don't want to be called, you know, I obviously know he's a heel, not a baby face, but he's one of the main faces of the company, of the WWE, as far as like people who you recognize and people who have been pushed in a top spot for the last few years and former world champion, you know, multiple times and stuff like that. So two guys that went in very different career paths since this match, but a match that I think is really cool to go back and watch. So once again, my free recommended match on YouTube is Ring of Honor, and it is Kenta versus Tyler Black from End of an Age 2009. That's once again completely for free on the ROH YouTube channel. But speaking of some ROH news, they have their Pure Championship tournament coming up soon, and it's going to be a 16-man tournament. For those of you who don't know, Ring of Honor used to have a Pure title belt, and I believe the first champion was AJ Styles, but I remember guys, I remember like specifically guys like Nigel McGuinness, and I think Bryan Danielson had it as well. I know that eventually it merged. If I remember correctly, Bryan Danielson defeated Nigel McGuinness to merge the two belts, and that just became the Ring of Honor world title, basically, if I remember that going down correctly. But it was a title that a lot of people liked. I remember Samoa Joe holding the title. It was a who's who of just some of the most talented wrestlers in the world held that Pure Championship. And it really is based more on, you know, kind of pure professional wrestling, as the title kind of implies. But because of what's going on in the world right now, some of the participants that have been announced will not be a part of the tournament. So people who are no longer a part of it, who are out, Doug Williams, Mark Haskins, Slex, Joe Hendry, Yuji Nagata, and Ren Narita were all supposed to be in the tournament, but they are no longer in. But the participants that we do have up to this point are Jay Lethal, Jonathan Gresham, Matt Seidel, Dave Finley, Tracy Williams, Josh Woods, and Wheeler Yuta. So it's a really, really great tournament already with the names that are confirmed and can make the show. Obviously, it would have been really interesting seeing a guy like Yuji Nagata in a match like this. You know, I'm a fan of Joe Hendry. I'm a fan of Mark Haskins. Doug Williams is a guy who's been wrestling for what seems like forever at this point. But of the people that have been announced, I would imagine Jonathan Gresham, he kind of stands out the most to me, but I've also been calling for Jonathan Gresham to be the World Heavyweight Champion for a long time now. I think Jonathan Gresham is probably the best overall wrestler that Ring of Honor has from like a pure standpoint, which also makes him a perfect candidate for this pure title. If not him, I'd like to see Hot Sauce Tracy Williams win if we're looking at like the people who are, if I'm speaking just from the people who have been announced and confirmed up to this point. For those of you who don't know, Jonathan Gresham and Tracy Williams both held the IWTV title back when it was the Powerbomb.tv title. And that title, of course, is currently held by Warhorse, and it's been heavily highlighted with him, you know, getting that TNT title match. The champion before him was Eric Stevens for a very short time. I believe Eric Stevens won and lost the title the same night. And before that, Orange Cassidy had had two runs with the title, one that lasted, well, both lasted probably around the same amount of time, but it was broken up for a short amount of time by actually Chris Statlander, who had won the title. So Orange Cassidy held it, lost it to Statlander, then won it back not long after. And I think up to that point, who else held that belt? I think it was just Tracy Williams and Jonathan Gresham. I could be missing a name in there somewhere, but it's a great list of people who have held that title, and I really love Tracy Williams' run with that belt. He really made it like a really prestigious, not that Jonathan Gresham didn't, but Tracy Williams' run with it, I think, was just better as far as like all the different companies he defended in and the great matches he had. So I guess this is all to say, I think Tracy Williams or Jonathan Gresham would both be fantastic choices to win this tournament. And all the people announced, though, I'm a fan of. Like, even Wheeler Yuta, who a lot of you might not know, he's another one of those indie guys that is just consistently solid. Like, he will always have a good match. He isn't overly flashy, but he kind of makes up for that with, like, it's hard to explain. Like, he's good with, like, his facial expressions. He's charismatic. He has a really good moveset, and he's just really, really, really solid. It's hard to put my finger on. There is something missing with Wheeler Yuta, but when he finds whatever that is, I think he's gonna really take off because he has all the skills to be you know, a major player somewhere, and that goes for everyone I've mentioned. I mean, obviously Matt Seidel, part of this tournament, also known as, you know, Evan Bourne in the WWE, and he's been around what I feel like is forever as well. And he's still one of the top, you know, high flyers, overall talents on the indie scene. So really great stuff from Ring of Honor. I'm looking forward to this tournament a lot. And I'm looking forward to this title belt being back in place because, you know, I'm one that's usually not big on a whole bunch of championships. Like, it preferably, the less titles a company has, the better for me. But when you have a list of talents like these guys that I'm mentioning, and you know that the belt is based on having great technical wrestling matches, I'm all for it because I think it's going to really be able to highlight these people I've been mentioning. And a lot of these people are the same types that I've been saying should be Ring of Honor World Champion or in the Ring of Honor World Title mix, and they've been kind of looked over as of late, the last few years, in my opinion. So, yeah, really good stuff from Ring of Honor. I really like seeing this tournament. I really like the return of the belt, and I really like the return of just new Ring of Honor content that I'll definitely be giving you the results for every week on the Weekender right here on Fightful Select, whenever those shows, you know, do happen to resume. Moving on, we got some Impact Wrestling results. So it was a bummer because Twitch was having issues throughout this show, mainly at the beginning of the show. And I hate that because I always talk up how great Impact Wrestling is on Twitch, like the fact that you can watch it through Twitch. I talk about that all the time. I might have even talked about it a week or two ago. If you want to go back and listen to some of the older episodes of this, for my full thoughts on Impact's relationship with Twitch, because I think it's a great concept. It's a great idea. And that's how I consume the show. I watch it on Twitch. But there was some Twitch issues this week, and that was a bummer, especially a bummer because for me, I think it happened to everyone around the same time. But for me, the issues were when Willie Mack was wrestling Eric Young in the opening match of the show. And what especially sucks about that is these are two of my favorite wrestlers in the company. Willie Mack, somebody I constantly say should be pushed towards the main event and get a world title run at some point soon. But he's basically a casualty at the moment of Eric Young's feud with Willie Mack, which is being highlighted as one of the top feuds in all of Impact Wrestling. So I'm fine with Eric Mack getting the win here, get someone with a pile driver. But they do need to rebuild Willie Mack. I'm okay with Willie Mack being used in this position to continue to build Eric Young, because Eric Young versus Rich Swann is very important right now for Impact Wrestling. But Willie Mack is also very important, in my opinion, to the future of the company. So maybe now that he's taken, you know, the two losses to Chris Bay, he lost to Eric Young, maybe he kind of reevaluates, reassesses, and comes back stronger, because he can still have that link to Rich Swann as like a tag team in an alliance. But both these guys, I think, are super talented, you know, Eric Young included. Eric Young, Willie Mack, and Rich Swann. I'm talking about all three of these guys really at the same time. They're all talented enough that they can really do anything on the show as singles wrestlers as well. So just keeping that in mind, you know, going forward. But for what I was able to see, once again, with the Twitch feed going in and out, this seemed like a solid match. I just hope they run it back soon at some point, so that we can see like a full-on match without the issues. After that, we had Jordynne Grace versus Kimberly. Jordynne Grace gets the win by choking out Kimberly with a rear naked choke. They continue to build Jordynne Grace, which I'm totally fine with. She's going to be wrestling Gianna Perrazzo for the championship in the rematch, so I'm all for it. You know, I love Jordynne Grace. I think she's one of the best women's wrestlers in the world. She can do good intergender wrestling as well. So there's a lot of upside. There's a lot that can do with Jordynne Grace. And it makes total sense that she'd win here over Kimberly. So no worries here. Good stuff. After that, we had Rob Van Dam and Katie Forbes in their locker room talking to Madison Rayne. And Sami Callihan winds up attacking Rob Van Dam. So that's where we're headed right now. We had the Rascals. They're like, it was weird because Trey is wearing a suicide mask. And then like, he like scares the other Rascals. And then I think one of them was like, oh man, Trey, you're suicide? Like, I thought that was actually kind of funny. Moose basically walks up and challenges, basically says Trey can challenge him for the TNA title. We get a Gianna Perrazzo promo, just continuing to hype up the match with Jordynne Grace, which is the first ever 30-minute Ironman match for women. For the knockouts division. So not only do I think that match is going to be really good, because their match at Slammiversary was probably match of the night, this is a great concept. It's something different, and it's something I think the two of them will absolutely be able to pull off, because I can't say it enough. Gianna Perrazzo and Jordynne Grace are both super talented, and Impact Wrestling's women's division, their knockouts division, I guess I should say, is definitely way better off for having the two of them. And because of the two of them, along with a handful of others I can mention, Impact Wrestling has one of, if not the best, overall women's division in all of wrestling, in my opinion, right now. I'm not huge on AEW's current division. I mean, WWE has a lot of talented women on contract, so I do have to be fair there. A lot of talented women on contract. But Impact Wrestling can hold their own, especially when they had Tessa, even though Tessa was used lately more against the men. And, you know, it's a huge loss for them from a talent perspective, losing Tessa Blanchard for any division, just for their show in general, because I do think that Tessa's the best female wrestler in the entire world. You know, all the other stuff aside, I know she has, like, the personal stuff, and I don't want to get into all that. I'm talking from just, like, strictly a professional wrestling standpoint. I think she's the best female wrestler in the world overall. That's for any company in the world. But even losing her, Impact Wrestling's women's division is still in pretty darn good shape. So, really great stuff for Perrazzo and Jordynne Grace. I'm really looking forward to that 30-minute Iron Woman match. We get some promos between the North and Motor City Machine Guns. It was good stuff. You know, a lot of passion from Ethan Page, as always. Josh Alexander doing his thing. Just those guys are so solid. The North is such a great tag team, and so are the Motor City Machine Guns. I think the rematch is going to be fantastic. The only issue I have with some of this is, like, we're getting quite a few rematches, I feel like, from Slammiversary coming up soon. And I feel like all the right booking decisions were made at Slammiversary, if that makes sense. So I don't know. I don't really want to see these people taking, you know, two L's in a row to some of these people also. Like, I'd like to see the North beat Motor City Machine Guns to prove that they're on their level. But what's the point of them losing the belts after that over a year-long title reign if they're just going to lose, you know, win them right back? Like, why break up the streak like that, which I just don't think that they would do. Same with Jordynne Grace and Deonna Purrazzo to a degree. I mean, Jordynne Grace didn't have the title nearly as long as the North did, but she was still a very, very formidable champion. So, I don't know. But the good thing is everybody involved is super talented. So I'm definitely not complaining about this stuff. It's just something kind of that I have in mind. Similar to Willie Mack, where, like, Willie Mack had his match against Chris Bay. I thought it was great. Second best match of the night. Oh, actually, the main event was pretty good. Pretty much all of Slammiversary was really, really good. If you didn't watch Slammiversary, I feel like you missed out. I thought it was a great wrestling show. But like, Willie Mack being a great example, loses to Chris Bay to lose the X Division Championship, and then the next episode of Impact on Twitch, he loses in the rematch, and now he's, like, on this losing streak, it seems like. So they got to be careful about how they kind of book and then rebuild some of the people who are losing these feuds. Just my personal opinion. Next match we had was an ODQ tag team match. Kiera Hogan and Tasha Steelz defeated Nevaeh and Havoc. The finish came when Kiera pinned Nevaeh with a fisherman suplex to get the 1-2-3. After this, we had Suicide, which was Trey Miguel of the Rascals, versus Dez. The match did not wind up happening because the Good Brothers, Carl Anderson, and Luke Gallows came out. They cut a promo on Ace Austin and Madman Fulton, and then Ace Austin and Madman Fulton are on the big screen cutting a promo back on them. Ace Austin, in my opinion, should be the Impact World Heavyweight Champion right now. The kid has so much upside. I like his teaming with Fulton. I don't want them as a tag team, though. I want Ace Austin as a singles performer. He was a great X Division champion. He could be a great world champion. Use Madman as his heavy, his heater, his bodyguard, whatever. That's what I think this should be for. I feel like the Good Brothers are going to beat these guys in a tag team match. And if they do, I hope it just leads to Ace Austin turning on Madman or something and then bringing on a different bodyguard or a stable or something. Or they teased Aces and Eights really heavily for Slammiversary, and this guy's name is Ace. You know, like, there's a lot they can do with that. I don't know. There's a lot they can do with Ace Austin, and I feel like he's being underused. And of course, I get, like, Gallows and Anderson were really big signings. There's a lot of buzz for them being back in Impact Wrestling, but in my opinion, it's a step backwards for Ace Austin. Just being dead honest, like, I think he should have won the world title at the Slammiversary. Like I've mentioned before, he was a great X Division champion, lost the belt to Willie Mack, which I was totally fine with because I think very highly of Willie Mack. So, you know, I think very highly of Ace Austin too. I want to see him in the main event. He's cutting great promos. He's got a great character, the purple hair, all that stuff. Like, he's the checks every box I'm looking for right now in a new superstar, a homegrown type guy for Impact Wrestling. So that's just my thoughts on that. Main event up next, we had Eddie Edwards doing another Impact Wrestling World Championship Open Challenge. The person that winds up accepting the challenge is Brian Myers, the former Curt Hawkins from WWE, who I'm a huge fan of because I'm a wrestling figure collector, and, you know, Cardona and Myers, they have a great YouTube show and podcast, and I'm really happy to see Brian Myers being used as, like, a main event level guy, at least for this night. It's a little strange from, like, a pro wrestling fan perspective, I will admit that, because if you don't follow kind of the wrestling figure world, where these guys are, like, the top, they're, like, the top guys. These guys are, like, the main eventers of the figure world, right? And that's a lot of people. There's way more fans that collect that really like these guys, and people probably realize that aren't into that scene. But there's also a lot of people who aren't into that scene, which I understand as well. And it might be a little strange seeing someone like Curt Hawkins, who was basically used as a perennial jobber with the WWE in his two runs there. I mean, he had some success, you know, with Ryder and their tag team, you know, throughout the years, But as a singles wrestler, he's basically known for a gigantic losing streak. And now he's supposed to be perceived as a top guy in this other company, which, you know, I can accept because I am a fan of his and I get how wrestling works and all that stuff. But from, you know, maybe a more of a casual viewer perspective, someone who just watches WWE that happened to flip on Impact Wrestling just because, you know, wanted to check it out, and you see Curt Hawkins come out for a world title match, you might be kind of like, what's going on over here? It might be a little confusing. That being said, I thought the match was really good. Andy Edwards retains with the Boston Knee Party. I'm still not into Edwards being the champion. Like, he's solid. He's reliable. I get it. He's somewhat being rewarded, I think, for being a company guy for as long as he has been for Impact. But he's had multiple world title runs, and this just doesn't do a whole lot for me. I'm just going to be totally honest. I like the open challenge, but, I mean, AEW is also doing it, and AEW is doing it better, in my opinion. But I do like it. I don't want Impact to stop it. It's just, I don't know. I mean, if this was a different world champion, not just Ace Austin, who I made it clear, you know, my thoughts on him, but this could have been a lot of different people in Eddie Edwards' spot doing the same thing, and I think it just would have been a lot more interesting. But that's just my personal opinion. I don't hate it. I just don't love it. And there's just a lot of talent already there that I think can really be highlighted. But I am really looking forward to Brian Myers' future in Impact Wrestling, because I said it from the time that those guys were let go by the WWE. I said Cardona should go to AEW. Myers should do his own thing. I didn't know where it would be, but Impact Wrestling made the most sense. And that's where he landed ultimately. I just think that Cardona is going to get over either way, I feel like, because he's been able to do that multiple times throughout his career with the WWE and over the internet and all that stuff. And I think this will give Myers a great opportunity to do something as a singles wrestler without the attachment to Cardona there, and also without like a giant losing streak. Like, if he can go out there and just like get some solid wins and, you know, restore credibility from like the kind of casual viewer's mind again, he could really do a lot of cool stuff. So I'm looking forward to Brian Myers and Impact Wrestling. And, you know, like I said, Eddie Edwards retains the belt once again on this show. So that's it for Impact Wrestling. Got a couple quick results for 205 Live. Show started off with Legado del Fantasma, which is the team of Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza, taking on Chase Parker and Matt Martel, also known as Ever-Rise. Finish came after Mendoza hit, I can't remember which, I think it was Parker, with a kick to the head for the 1-2-3. And obviously Santos Escobar was ringside for this, and he was very happy. Solid match. Ever-Rise, you know, it's weird seeing a tag team in 205 Live, and I've talked about that in past episodes of the show as well, but they're having some solid tag team matches, and it's giving other teams a reason to be tag teams and wrestle them and stuff like that. And Legado del Fantasma, I think, is a great stable, and they make 205 Live much more interesting. And it's like actual storylines and actual characters versus just like a bunch of random cruiserweight matches. So I really do like that. And in the main event, which was the only other match of the show, we had Arya Daivari having his first match since March, taking on Jake Atlas. Daivari winds up getting the win after he removed a turnbuckle pad. The referee gets distracted. Daivari winds up doing a thumb to the eyes and then hits him with his hammerlock lariat to get the 1-2-3. So Daivari is back and in the winning bracket as well. So, you know, two solid matches, not a whole lot of, you know, stakes on this show. But if you got a little extra time, I mean, I'd recommend checking it out. I say that at about 205 Live every week. And I know I sound like a broken record, but it's like, there's never going to be anything on 205 Live that you like have to go out of your way to watch. Unless maybe there's a great title match or something like that. I'm a big fan of Isaiah Swerve Scott, and he's been heavily highlighted lately on 205 Live and stuff. But at the same time, he's just like a nameless face during Raw Underground in the crowd and stuff, and like getting beat up by people. And so it's weird, but that's all to say, 205 Live consistently has solid wrestling, and it does at least give people a chance on some sort of major stage, you know, WWE Network, to have some solid matches. I can't stress it enough, the Legado del Fantasma, I think, is great, because it works not only in 205 Live, it works in NXT, it could work on the main roster. All three guys are very talented, so, yeah, I mean, more good stuff, solid 205 Live. Moving on, I've got two nights worth of results for you for ICW No Holds Barred. These are for Volume 4 and Volume 5 of Deathmatch Circus. So on Volume 4, we had Mance Warner defeating Tony Deppen, Reed Bentley defeating Dale Patricks, Jimmy Lloyd defeating Brandon Kirk, a Taipei Deathmatch where Eric Ryan defeated Eddie Only, Alex Ocean defeated Alex Conlin by referee's decision, Shellac defeated Casanova Valentine, and John Wayne Murdoch defeated Akira. Couple names I'm going to highlight real quick from this. Mance Warner, can't say it enough. He is ready. He is ready for Impact Wrestling. He's ready for AEW. He's ready for New Japan. He's ready for WWE or NXT. Whoever can give him the right offer, I feel like he will wind up being a very big star somewhere. Cannot stress it enough. He is killing it out there on the indies. He's been doing it for a while. He's been putting on more size. He's a great character. He's a great wrestler. He's a great promo. He's got great merch. Whole deal. Checks every box, and he's different. He's unique. He brings a different type of gimmick and character. Huge fan of Mance Warner, and I'm a huge fan of Tony Deppen as well. Tony Deppen's been having some of the best matches on the indies. I mean, just you can consistently count on Tony Deppen to have one of the best matches of the night every time you see him, and that's one of the highest compliments I can give anybody. Eddie Only, I'm going to throw out a shout-out to him as well. He's kind of reinvented himself lately. Years ago, I remember his tag team with Derek Direction, known as The Production, had really good matches. Eddie Only does some pretty crazy stuff. But now he's put a lot of weight on him, and he's kind of like this alcoholic, like beer-drinking, cigarette-smoking type dude with 440. You know, the Ricky Shane Page, Atticus Coger, you know, group and all that. But shout out to Eddie Only. He's reinvented himself and he's been doing some pretty cool stuff. I'm not huge on deathmatch wrestling, admittedly, but I do follow it, you know, somewhat closely. And Eddie Only's been improving a lot as a singles guy, in my opinion, lately. And I like him as a part of that group a lot. So once again, that was Volume 4 of Deathmatch Circus. Volume 5 results, we have a no ropes barbed wire match. Homicide defeating Shellac. I mean, the legend Homicide. That guy's still out there doing it. Man, I still remember the first time I saw him. I had to have been like Ring of Honor way back in the day. I think he was the Ring of Honor world champion, like really early on. So, you know, huge shout out to Homicide. And Shellac's been like the death match, like kind of king lately. So, big win for Homicide. Chris Dickinson defeated Tony Deppen. Chris Dickinson, he's just like Mance Warner. He's ready. I mean, he's going to wind up somewhere, I'd imagine, pretty soon. I've talked about it a lot on this show, but WrestleMania weekend this year would have been huge for him. So it's a bummer to see that he didn't get his chance earlier. But I think Chris Dickinson's chance is definitely coming. And he wrestled Tony Deppen, who I just mentioned. You know, Chris Dickinson and Tony Deppen are both kind of in the same boat when it comes to, like, you can count on them to have a memorable match on every show, and the two of them against each other, I'm down to watch always. Great stuff. We had Reed Bentley defeating Dale Patricks, Eddie Only, who I just mentioned, getting a big win over Alex Ocean. We had Mance Warner defeating Casanova Valentine, and once again, Mance Warner is the man. Akira defeated Jimmy Lloyd. There was a Funhouse death match where Eric Ryan defeated Pagano, and that was by referee's decision. And in the main event, we had John Wayne Murdoch defeat Atticus Coger. It's also worth mentioning on the show, there were some run-ins by Nick Gage and Homicide. Or not Homicide, Nick Gage and New Jack. So if you're, you know, a fan of those guys, especially if you're a fan of New Jack and you want to see kind of him randomly popping up on this show, you know, New Jack, obviously a very polarizing figure in professional wrestling. And check out the Dark Side of the Ring episode on him if you haven't seen it. But yeah, New Jack popped up and yeah, if you're into deathmatch wrestling, these shows were great. So once again, this was ICW No Hold Barred Volume 5 Deathmatch Circus. So check those out. Both shows, I believe, are both available right now on IWTV. I know I just gave you basically spoilers for all of them if you're planning on watching, but if you want to check these matches out, I think they're all available on IWTV already. All right, last up, we have a recap for the latest Being the Elite episode. It is titled Malfunction. Show starts off with Matt and Nick Jackson talking about getting Matt inspired. Nick basically brings Matt to their backyard ring. There's a couple old guys in there, kind of like two jobber-looking type guys that I don't really know. they're in there, and like they start hitting with all these, they start hitting Matt Jackson with all these high spots. And it's funny because Nick's referencing, like, he's like, man, I've seen people on NXT do this move, and then like it'd be like a double team move onto Matt, and then like Nick would make a Royal Rumble reference, and he's trying to inspire Matt. Like, that's his whole thing, inspire Matt. Basically, these guys try to throw Matt Jackson over the top rope like it's the Royal Rumble, and he catches himself, and he's hanging upside down. And while he's upside down, he's, like, talking about hanging up. Like, in the word kind of talking about hanging upside down reminds him about hanging signs and frames in his house. So we get a 50-plus seconds for 50-plus segment where Matt Jackson is hanging frames in his house, basically showing you with tape and nails how to level and put up your pictures and frames and stuff in your house on your wall level. And I'm not going to lie, it was actually a really useful segment for someone like me, because I've never thought about doing it the way that they did with the tape and stuff. The tape, the marker, and the nails. I know I might sound, this might sound like, you know, there might be the most basic knowledge of all time that that's the way to do it. I just never have. And I hang up a lot of stuff, and it's a lot of trial and error for me, because I've got like a lot of signed stuff and UFC posters and 8x10s and a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, all over my office and in my condo and stuff. So the segment actually helped me out a lot. I'm only 32. I'm not in that 50 plus, but this segment actually did help me a lot for future, for hanging stuff in my houses and stuff. So, I'm not going to lie. Like, I actually really appreciated this 50 plus seconds or 50 plus. After that, we have Brandon Cutler talking to the Young Bucks about how the Best Friends killed Colt Cabana last week. If you don't know what I'm talking about, check out the show from last week. But basically, Best Friends accidentally went to try to murder Colt Cabana, thinking it was Brandon Cutler in a dark room. And Brandon Cutler's like, I don't know if they actually killed him, but they definitely jerked him off and poured gold on his head, which I thought was hilarious. Brandon Cutler goes on to talk about how there was blood, explosive diarrhea, and cum found in the room. And after the Young Bucks explain that there was like birthdays and that like Michael Nakazawa used the same locker room and all this stuff, Cutler doesn't seem suspicious anymore and just realizes it might have just been a normal weekend that they found explosive diarrhea, blood, and cum all over a room. So, man, nothing too out of the normal. Maybe they didn't try to kill him. And then Brandon Cutler also throws in that he's too contract cool, which I thought was actually pretty funny. After that, Matt Jackson is talking the Young Bucks are talking to Matt Hardy, and they're asking if they want to, if they basically ask Matt Hardy if they want them to fire Sammy Guevara for throwing the chair at him. And Hardy starts talking about being Matthew Hardy, and then he starts like kind of going into all of his other gimmicks, like he's doing the version one and the Big Money Matt, and he stops the multiverse and the whole deal. So Matt Hardy's like definitely going even more nuts, it seems like. We see Marco Stunt following a trail of candy. It leads him to Silver and Reynolds of the Dark Order. Basically, they try to use that to get Marco to drink the Kool-Aid and, you know, basically join the Dark Order. Luchasaurus walks in and stops Marco from drinking the Kool-Aid, and they go to work on their next match. We get a pretty good TH2 promo. I really especially like the mic work of Jack Evans. And I've talked about it 1,000 times. Jack Evans is one of the first guys on the indie scene that I became like aware of that. And this was like the year 2000 or something like that. I mean, really, really long time ago, 20 years ago, probably. And it's pretty crazy. He's just now kind of getting his chance on mainstream TV. Like, he did stuff with Lucha Underground, but that's, you know, it's a bit different. Did stuff on Wrestling Society X, if I remember correctly. But you know, it's cool to see Jack Evans getting a chance. But it is a little confusing because TH2 has been losing matches on Dark lately. So I don't know if they have like a big Dynamite push in store, or if that's just kind of still where they're at booking wise, is just like losing on Dark. I don't know. But they're a very good tag team, but the AEW tag team division is stacked. So it just might be a minute before we see them highlighted again. We get a Speaking Spanglish segment. The word is chisme. I might be saying that wrong. Basically, there's a big game of telephone played where Ortiz whispers to Santana, then Santana goes and whispers to someone else, and that person whispers to someone else, and it goes through a whole bunch of people. Eventually, Marco Stunt walks in to talk to Ortiz and Santana, and like the whole conversation is bleeped out, but you can tell that Marco's talking about his dick size. And then he leaves after saying, "It's all true. I just didn't want anybody to know." And I think it's implied that Marco has a very large penis. I think that's kind of what they're going with this. After that, we see Brody Lee talking with the Dark Order, and he's really happy because, so right when he walks in, it's like the guys are standing around, and he makes sure that Uno and Grayson are standing together on one side of the room, and Silver and Reynolds are standing together on the other side of the room, because he's constantly choosing, like, the people he thinks are, like, reliable and winners versus, like, the people he absolutely can't stand. And Silver's always in that group of the people he can't stand, which is just hilarious. All their stuff has been so funny lately. Basically, Brody is super happy that Grayson and Uno got a big win, and Silver and Reynolds, you know, lost, and Brody basically berates them for losing to Matt Cardona, because it was Matt Cardona and Cody that Silver and Reynolds had lost to. Brody winds up giving Evil Uno the big stack of papers, and he tells him to hit Silver in the head with them. And then Uno goes on this huge power trip and throws the papers at Silver's head, and it's like this weak throw. And after he throws it, he's like, "I am powerful, yes!" It's just hilarious. Silver says he throws like a bitch, "I'm not selling for you," which I thought was absolutely hilarious. And then Brody tells Uno, "Good job," and then he winds up walking away with Stu Grayson, and Uno kind of like trails behind. After that, we get a segment where Christopher Daniels basically does a commercial for BrizBraz.com, which, you know, not .com, .com. I think this is all obviously fake. But he's trying to tell people to invest in pennies and copper. And this is basically, I think, his attempt on helping out with the 50-plus demographic. After that, in the last segment of the show, all the Elite, aside from Cody, if you still consider Cody to be in the Elite, all the Elite is together in the locker room. Kenny is embarrassed that they lost to the Dark Order, and he's calling them a comedy act. The Young Bucks are talking about how they thought they were getting the New Japan cleaner version of Kenny Omega in AEW, but they wound up getting the DDT comedy version. The Elite kind of start arguing, but they want to forget all about it, and they turn on the TV. As they're watching TV, they see the Dark Order sitting together at Chili's. They're all singing the "I want my baby back, baby back, baby back." They're all singing that song except for Stu Grayson, who's just sitting there with his arms crossed because he's like the only one not putting up with all this. Brody Lee walks in, tells them all to shut up, and he turns around and yells, "And fucking barbecue sauce!" And then we get an actual Dark Order Chili's commercial, which I think was voiced by Brody Lee. And then we cut back to the Elite, who are absolutely pissed off at Matt Jackson because he's the one who blew their opportunity for getting the Chili's ad. Weeks back, he bladed all over the contract to get out of it. Nick says, "Merch free singles run," which I thought was funny. And the entire Elite flick off Matt Jackson as the show ends. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. You can shoot me a follow on Twitter at @FightTalk_. That's @FIGHTTALK_. Till next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.